Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to today's program. I'm Tracy McClure. Coming up over the next half hour, Pope Benedict prays for the families and friends of victims of Monday's shooting at Virginia Tech University in the U.S. How many planets can boast double suns like the one in the old Star Wars film? The Vatican Observatory has been working together with NASA and leading U.S. astronomers to find out. And the shocking indifference of the world and a government to the human tragedy of AIDS in Zimbabwe. One of the country's top prelates speaks out. And in our top story today, Pope Benedict XVI has sent a message conveying his condolences to the families and friends of victims of Monday's horrific shooting at Virginia Tech University in the U.S. state of Virginia. The Pope expressed his sorrow over the tragedy in a telegram sent to the Bishop of Richmond, Virginia. Emer McCarthy tells us more.
The telegram addressed to Bishop Francis Di Lorenzo, pastor of the diocese, was written on behalf of the Pope by Vatican Secretary of State Cardinal Tarcisio Bertone and reads, "Deeply saddened by the news of the shooting at Virginia Tech, His Holiness Pope Benedict XVI has asked me to convey the assurance of his heartfelt prayers for the victims, their families, and for the entire school community. In the aftermath of this senseless tragedy, he asks God our Father to console all those who mourn and to grant them that spiritual strength which triumphs over violence by the power of forgiveness, hope, and reconciling love." From the newsroom, I'm Emer McCarthy.
And Bishop Di Lorenzo spoke to Vatican Radio about his reaction to the tragedy.
"I am terribly saddened by all this loss of life, and I'm extremely upset for the poor parents who have invested so much love into these children over a period of years, and now as things are moving on successfully in life, they're moving to young adulthood, they're now cut down in the prime of their lives. Those poor parents and their brothers and sisters, it's just so sad for them as well. I'm sure there are some students who wonder, why is it that I'm still alive and these other 32 persons have died? What does that mean for me? And I would suggest to them that God has an ongoing plan for them here and now, that obviously they are expected to take this gift of life that they have, be thankful that there is a plan in their lives, and that they should search that plan out and then follow through on what they believe to be God's plan for them in this life. Live this life out to the fullest with His help and with His guidance."
Bishop Francis Di Lorenzo from Richmond, Virginia. Vatican astronomers teamed up with NASA, the U.S. National Observatory, and a string of American universities in a recent project to investigate twin stars and planet formation. While the Earth has one star, the Sun, they wondered how many other planets might be out there with double suns. Two suns like those Luke Skywalker watches as they set on the horizon in the 1977 Star Wars film classic. Though the Vatican has its own observatory at the Pope's summer residence in hilly Castel Gandolfo outside Rome, the vastly expanded city has brightened the skies, making stargazing difficult for the Jesuit astronomers there. For this reason, in 1981, the observatory founded a second research center, the Vatican Observatory Research Group, based at the University of Arizona in Tucson. It was from there that the Vatican astronomers conducted their research in the Twin Star Project. Vice Director of the Vatican's Tucson Observatory, Father Chris Corbelli, says there might be many planets where Luke Skywalker could gaze on a double sunset.
The suns for Luke Skywalker's people on his planet were very close together. not hugely far apart as we have been finding them, but they were very close together. And so the question is, was that a true depiction? As far as we can see, yes, it is. And it's not only true, but for those stars that are in doubles, that are twins, so together as they sort of go around each other in their lifetimes, then the tendency is to have planetary material, more planetary material, the closer they are together.
Talk about global warming. What would an extra sun do to the Earth's temperature?
It would certainly be hotter than a planet with just one sun, yes, because you'll have, let's say, twice the output of heat from two suns rather than one sun.
But it was the planetary material found near these stars that most interested Father Corbelly and his colleague Richard Gray of Appalachian State University in North Carolina. That's what they were working on when they were asked to join the project to investigate whether planets form around stars that are twins.
We obviously know that from our own solar system that we've got planets around our sun, which is a single sun. But if you've got double suns, are you going to get planets? And so that's the question. What's been found by the planet study of planets around other stars is that indeed about 50 out of the 200 planets that have been found around other stars are indeed around stars that are twins. But these stars are very far apart, very far. So how about stars that are much closer together, of which there are a whole bundle of these twin stars? Are you going to get planets? So that was the question.
The question that still puzzles astronomers like Father Corbelly, though, is what he calls the nature or nurture of planet formation. Like babies, are planets born with certain characteristics? Or is it circumstance, the environment, that makes them develop the way they do?
Someone's characteristics, are they, you know, what they are born with, or is it how they grow up that's what the characteristics they have when they're an adult? So the same thing with this planetary material, this dusty and rocky material around planets. Is it, you know, the way they are born? And if their planets, suns are close together, then they'll have a lot of this dusty, rocky material. Or because they are close together, then they make a lot of dusty and rocky material as they go through their early lifetime. So this is still a question that's out there. We'll have to do some other investigations to try and get an answer to that. But so this is maybe an interest and a surprise in store.
So, what surprises might these latest findings eventually lead to?
What we can know is that, forming planets seems to be much more, common after this study. So, yes, we knew that single stars, like our own sun, probably have planetary material around them. Yes, we knew that, those fewer stars that are twins that are very widely separated also have planetary material around them. But now we know that, practically all twin stars, except those in a kind of an intermediate separation, do have this planetary material. So what it tells us is that the formation of planets in our universe is pretty darn common, in the order of 40%. Of the stars that we find seem to have this planetary material.
Researchers now have a better understanding about how our own solar system and planets came together. So where does this leave the Big Bang theory about how the universe came about? Are we any closer to finding out the real answer to one of humanity's greatest conundrums?
It certainly goes back to the story of how, from the the beginnings of the universe, the Big Bang, which current best model, then we get to planets like our own Earth and so life are on these planets. And you were asking also about whether a planet with a twin star would be hotter. So what you'd need then for life is that a planet would have to be rather further away than our own Earth is from our own sun.
It's quite impressive, Father, that this is a joint project with so many important institutions in the United States. You presented this project to NASA. You were involved with the California Institute of Technology, the University of Arizona, so many different institutions.
National Observatory, yes.
Is it unusual that the Vatican does participate in such widely respected research projects?
Well, as usual, one comes into these things somewhat accidentally, but with other colleagues, including Richard Gray, who's from Appalachia State University, we've been interested in our neighbors, you know, our neighboring stars for the last several years. And so we're doing a look-see, a survey of our neighbors. There end up around 3,600 stars that are within a certain distance out from our own sun, and we've been getting the good information about these stars. And because many of these stars were in the ones that this group were interested in investigating, for the dusty, whether they had dust around them and rocky debris, then we were asked to, myself and Richard Gray were asked to join the project and contribute what we'd found out about our neighboring stars.
Now, you're a priest, a Jesuit priest, and I'm just curious to know how, when you go around, and I'm sure you give conferences and give talks at various institutions around the world about your research, do people look at you differently, strangely, because you're a priest and an astronomer at the same time?
For those who don't know the more than 400 years of the Vatican's involvement with astronomy, yes, that they will say, what? The Vatican has an observatory. For those who do, then it isn't a surprise. But as you say, for a lot of people, it's a surprise that the Vatican has this very professional involvement in astronomy.
How did you conduct this research on the suns? I mean, were you using special telescopes? Tell me more about that.
Well, the background data, which myself and my colleague Richard Gray did, were done with telescopes in the northern hemisphere and the southern hemisphere, so Earth-based telescopes, a very modest size. But we were getting very good and consistent data. So it's those that we input saying, what to expect from an ordinary star on its own if we found it out there. Then what was the additional data that this team, the rest of the team were producing, was data from satellite, but really it's a space observatory that lies some distance back from the Earth in our Earth journey around the Sun, called the Spitzer Telescope. And this is very sensitive in the infrared, or the heat region of radiation. And it was looking with, as it were, this Spitzer Telescope's eyes, its heat-sensitive eyes, that we're able to see the additional information that around these stars and see how what we expected from the data that Richard Gray and I gave, how the heat data differed from this, that then gave the clue that yes, what we're seeing is the glow, the warmth, as it were, from this dusty debris.
Father Corbelly likes to call his twin stars neighborhood stars because they're right in our backyard, so to speak, just 200 light-years away. Though that might sound like a lot, it's not, especially when your galaxy's backyard is 100,000 light-years wide.
Which is really, kind of the end of your arm as far as the space is concerned. So kind of reach out and feel around in your back garden and, see what's in the neighborhood.
I came across, Father, a very interesting quote from the 17th century astronomer Galileo Galilei. I'm sure you're very familiar with that name.
who
an interesting gentleman, certainly.
Yes. He was at odds with the church, of course, over his discovery that the earth revolved around the sun. He said in this quote, and I'll just read it to you, "I do not feel obliged to believe that the same God who has endowed us with sense, reason, and intellect has intended us to forego their use." What do you make of that in today's context? And would you say that the church has matured in the way it approaches scientific research over the centuries?
Yes, so using sense, reason, and intellect is what we are asked to do by God. That's our God-given gifts. Now, what we've needed to learn is what's the appropriate use of these, you know, the sense, reason, and intellect in the various disciplines of study. So what's appropriate in theology and, say, the study of scriptures is not appropriate, or you're answering different questions in science. And obviously in Galileo's day, it is trying to distinguish what questions were appropriate for science and what questions were appropriate for theology. But that was the difficulty.
How does the astronomer churchman, Father Corbelly, feel about his own scientific work and his latest findings?
Just the joy of discovery. What we do it for is obviously to find out these new things and to find the fascination of the universe in which, you know, God has put us. And so there's always a joy in this discovery. It's not a huge discovery that we make with the Spitzer telescope and with the Nearby Stars project of Richard Gray and myself, but it's another little sort of brick there in the whole wall of edifice, let's say, of our understanding. So it's fun to be part of. It's great too that the church is sensitive to this kind of discovery and to the joys of the universe, the joys which the Creator has given us.
You make me feel diminished in a certain way, because I'm just sitting here in a studio and you've contributed in such a big way to a huge scientific discovery. Do you feel God's presence when you are doing this work?
One feels a connection, certainly, with God, because one's involved with God's creation. So there is a relationship there with the Creator. So yes, a lot of the work is obviously sometimes tedious, certainly very methodical, and doing things and needs concentration. But it's the times that you can step back, such as talking with you, and say, "Gosh, isn't it wonderful? And isn't it wonderful to learn that little bit more about our God-given universe?"
Stargazer Father Chris Corbelly, Vice Director of the Vatican Observatory Research Center in Tucson, Arizona. Tara is 9 years old, and she should be in fourth grade at school. She's not, because she's taking care of her four younger brothers and sisters of 1, 3, 5, and 7 years. Tara's parents died 1 year apart of AIDS. Sometimes Tara gets help from her aging grandmother living in the next village, but for the most part, it is up to her and to her 7-year-old brother Samuel to find food and clean water each day. Tara and her brothers and sisters live in Zimbabwe, where they are not alone. Some 1.6 million children like them have lost one or both of their parents to HIV/AIDS. 3,000 Zimbabweans die every week in the southern African country, among the worst hit by the pandemic. Sister Janet Ferns, who as a former missionary in Zambia saw the devastating consequences of AIDS on children and their families there, recently sat down for a talk with Zimbabwe's Archbishop Pius Nakube. The Archbishop accuses the Harare government of doing too little to prevent the spread of AIDS and to assist these orphans. Many live in appalling conditions with little to no health care or schooling, and often fall victim to unscrupulous predators.
Zimbabwe is in a very bad state now, and people are thinking of food. I mean, certainly more people die in Zimbabwe than even in Darfur and in Iraq. This is true.
There is a saying that when everything is said and done, there's a lot more said than done. Huge sums of money have been spent across the world in promoting AIDS awareness, but governments still do things that promote the spread of the disease. When allocating teachers to schools, for instance, there is no recognition made of their marital status, and so husbands and wives find themselves at the opposite ends of the country. Archbishop Pius Ntube of Bulawayo, Zimbabwe, is only stating the commonplace.
These people are married, and the government has never taken any steps to see to it that people should live together, couples live together to reduce. I mean, 500 to 700 are dying per day in Zimbabwe. I have priests who have buried 3, 4, or 5 people a day, each with their own funeral. And it's very depressing for a young priest to be burying 4 people in one day.
The same thing is happening throughout Africa. In Zambia, I personally used to see the day-long, unending procession of funeral corteges wending their way between Lusaka's University Teaching Hospital and the cemetery at Leopard's Hill. The story in Zimbabwe is identical.
We have 1,300 orphans below the age of 18. We have young girls of 15 looking after 3 or 4 of its younger brothers where both parents have died. So we are living in such a hand-to-mouth situation.
And when you have child-headed households, you've got children trying to look after the feeding, the education, the clothing, and the health care of other children.
Yes, it's heartbreaking. It could make you weep. In my diocese in Bulawayo, we have what is called ASDAUS, an AIDS and Orphan Care Program. It's supported by Catholic Relief Services. I sit in the committee there and listen to the workers about things happening there. It's absolutely heartbreaking. These youngsters, they are left all alone. And you are 15, you are expected now to act like a 40-year-old. These youngsters are often also exploited by neighbors. It's not uncommon that this poor 15-year-old girl finds herself pregnant because she's trying to look for money to sustain her young brothers and sisters. Often their property is taken away by other human predators. They know that these youngsters, you know, they can hardly defend themselves, but usually we try through justice and peace to defend them, even legally. It's quite a shock. I mean, I don't know what type of people we will have coming from that messy situation where a little child is looking after other children. This little child doesn't know any culture, has not been trained in any responsibility, doesn't know any values, strong values. This little child is such like a little animal that has to survive on what is around it. I just don't know. A new generation is developing of people who don't know their roots, who just look at survival, who don't think of any morals, who don't think of any future. As long as they've had enough to eat today, it doesn't matter how they got it, whether rightly or wrongly, it's fine. It's quite heartbreaking. I fear for the future. I don't know what type of new generation we're going to have. The government itself, being so self-centered, hasn't put in process, and this problem has been around for the last 22 years of AIDS in Zimbabwe. They've never put in place anything like a social welfare system or support system for all these orphans because they are so engrossed in the money-making for themselves and in corruption that they've never really thought very deeply about Plan B. What happens when the old granny dies? And I think many of these grannies, they die quicker because they are so stressed, they are so heartbroken, and there's no one to support these orphans, and here they are, because sometimes it's quite shocking. I think we, in Zimbabwe, perhaps as well as other parts of Africa, we must think hard. Because, I mean, often you find that this old lady had perhaps 8 children. 5 of the children die, or 6. And all the and their partners die also. And all the children have died to be looked after by the old granny.
The United Nations World Food Programme will supply some food for AIDS patients and their families. There is also a Food for Work programme, whereby women are paid with food for taking part in a particular project. But those projects are frequently involving road maintenance and road building.
We ourselves haven't reasoned strongly enough to say, how do we solve this problem? We just leave it to chance. I mean, how often have I seen a situation where a man's wife dies, and it's clear that she has died of AIDS. And 3 months later, another woman comes and parks herself there, lives with the same man. Well, she's also going to clearly die of AIDS. But sometimes there's no logic. We kind of think instinctively. We should plan properly and systematically. And when such things happen, the family should sit down and ask each other, what do we do? Yeah. And then another thing, there's too much of a taboo, no speaking about sex. We just have to be open to speak about sex. Okay, I know that when we grow, we begin to have sexual feelings as natural. I think when we sometimes, when you talk to the children and when we bring them to workshops, sometimes the church is running AIDS awareness workshops. We bring these youngsters for 3 or 4 days and they hear from other youngsters. They come back from there, they are strengthened, and then they tell you, yes, really, we were very impressed how other young people of our age, how they prevent allowing themselves to get into this situation. The big problem in Africa, sometimes there's too much silence. Yeah, we have to be open because, I mean, I have a lot of relatives and cousins and so on who died, and it was clear that is AIDS. But you hear people saying, hey, you know, this one is sick. We don't know what happened, but it's clear that it's AIDS. All the symptoms of AIDS are there. Unless we become open and talk about it and say, now let's take steps to prevent it, we're going to continue in that mess.
A very worrying future indeed for coming generations in Zimbabwe. That was Archbishop Pius Nakube of Zimbabwe speaking to Sister Janet Ferns. Well, that's all we have time for today. Thanks for listening. I'm Tracy McClure. If you'd like to hear this and other programs on our website, the address is www.vaticanradio.org. Again, thanks for listening.
Listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudator Jesus Christus.